athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
As always, thank you for joining me on another edition of Box to Row. We've got a good show for you today. As a matter of fact, we've got a couple of guests that are going to join us today here on Box to Row. South Carolina State head football coach Chennis Berry, in his first season, going to join us. The Bulldogs 1-2 on the season, coming off a bye week. And you go back a couple of weeks ago, or the week that before the bye week, coming off the loss to Georgia Southern playing up. But the week before that, week two, in HBCU football, a big win over the Citadel. In week one, a tough loss, a fourth quarter lead loss to Florida A&M. So I think South Carolina State is playing relatively well. Chennis Berry, the head football coach of the Bulldogs, going to join us on the program. And it's a rivalry game, as North Carolina A&T was coming off a bad beating at the hands of North Carolina Central last week, are coming in to Bulldog Stadium. So we're going to talk with Chennis Berry. Also joining us today here on the program, you look at Hampton. Lost its first game of the season to Morgan State, has since won three straight games, including the victory over Howard last week in Washington, D.C., in the Classic, the eighth straight victory by Hampton over Howard. And now the Pirates have jumped from number 10 all the way up to number 3 in the HBCU coaches poll. And Trenton Boykin is the interim head football coach at Hampton. He's going to join us today here on the program. We got plenty of HBCU talk today. The HBCU National Game of the Week, going to preview that. The game between Norfolk State and North Carolina Central in Indianapolis. And also, even before that, I got to give two shots out, right? The first shot out goes to the Washington Commanders. My team went into Cincinnati on Monday Night Football, where, quite frankly, quite a few times, the Commanders have lost quite a few games on Monday Night Football, embarrassed themselves quite a few times, to the point that I don't recall a bunch of Monday Night games more recently. But if you go back 5-6 years ago, I mean, it seemed like the Commanders were playing, even though, you know, they were bad in some years, going back to the days of being named the Redskins, were still playing on Monday Night Football. Well, gotta win. Jaden Daniels has been really, really good. He hasn't turned the ball over. He got his first passing touchdown. You know, he's been good, and the defense was good enough against good enough against Joe Burrow and that Cincinnati team. So, shouts out to the Commanders. The other shout out I have to give is to the Carolina Panthers. Talked extensively last week about the troubles with Bryce Young and that Andy Dalton would now be coming in. I'm not sold on Andy Dalton, or wasn't sold on Andy Dalton. But I will say, and we have to see what happens moving forward. Carolina stomped a mud hole in the Raiders. I didn't see that coming. I did not see Andy Dalton playing that well. Now we'll see what happens moving forward with Andy Dalton. But again, kudos to Carolina, because I thought the Panthers, I just thought the season was over, and it's not. I mean, there's still a shot, the NFC South. I mean, the Saints lost, even though the Saints played a good game in a tough battle with Philadelphia, lost that game. So now you're talking about I thought the Panthers were easily going to be 0-3 and take a loss to the Raiders, and went on the road at that and beat the Raiders. So I've got to give shots out to the Carolina Panthers. The HBCU National Players of the Week. First off, Clark Atlanta quarterback David Wright III. I mean, this guy has been absolutely incredible this year, but not only this year, at his time at Allen. Of course, Teddy Keaton left Allen to become the head coach at Clark. And of course, Wright went with him now to Clark. He leads Division II in touchdown passes, in passing yards. And Clark went into Daytona Beach and upset Bethune-Cookman. That was not supposed to happen. Okay, Wright, 30 of 49, 374 yards, four touchdowns, rushed for another 21 yards in helping to lead Clark to the victory, a game-winning field goal by Clark. And Clark Atlanta was able to get out of Daytona Beach with a victory. Also, congratulate, well, we had three players of the week. Norfolk State quarterback Jalen Daniels and North Carolina Central quarterback Walker Harris, both also named HBCU National Players of the Week. Daniels amassed 307 yards of total offense. He completed 20 of 29 passes for 277 yards with no interceptions and three touchdowns, rushed for another 30 yards as the Spartans got the victory over VMI 32-10. And then also, let me tell you, Walker Harris looked really, 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 really good. He threw for three touchdowns, no interceptions. Big victory by North Carolina Central over North Carolina A&T in that rivalry game, 66-24, if you can believe that. Had a chance to be in at that game. Look, I've called games now. This is my ninth season as the play-by-play voice for North Carolina A&T football. I've never seen A&T get beat like that. 16 of 23, 272 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions for Walker Harris. You can learn more about all three of these young men on our website at boxtorow.com and learn more, not just beyond their numbers, but learn more about them and their journeys. So the HBCU National Game of the Week, North Carolina Central and Norfolk State going to play in Indianapolis in the Classic there. And this is a MEAC game, probably a little bit earlier than the rest of the MEAC teams would play. I don't think MEAC play starts for another real MEAC play starts for another couple of weeks. So one team is going to have the advantage, the other team not so much when it comes down to that MEAC race. I look at this team, and let me start with North Carolina Central. Walker Harris looked absolutely unbelievable. The running back, Jamari Taylor, looked really, really good. That offensive line was solid. I mean, North Carolina Central rolled up some serious yardage and put up some serious points against North Carolina A&T. I think Jamari Taylor is really, really good. The running back, he's really good out of the backfield also. And when I look at this Norfolk State defense, the Norfolk State defense now has done some things. Maybe not in the numbers game. They're pretty solid. I would say the Spartans are pretty solid against the run, not so much against the pass. But even in the loss to ECU, the Spartans forced six turnovers in that game. So the Spartans are opportunistic, held VMI this past week to only 10 points. So when I look at it from that vantage point, that's a decent matchup. I really like North Carolina Central's offense, but let me say this about the Eagles as a whole. Coming off an emotional game, an emotional victory, a rivalry game against A&T, how will the Eagles now respond having to go to Indianapolis on a neutral site and play against the Spartans? The Eagles were jacked up. The Eagles wanted that football game more than A&T wanted it last week, and that showed on the field. It showed in the score. But now, you know, how does Trey Oliver and that staff get and his staff get those guys riled up? There were so many things. And look, this was something that, you look, Trey Oliver had been looking at for a while. A couple of different factors, including the first time A&T and North Carolina Central played when Trey Oliver was the head coach back in 2019. It was a 45-0 victory by the Aggies. So that and some other things led to him really getting his team pumped up. Can he and his staff get that team pumped up for this, like it was for A&T for this game? Let me look at the other side, and let's look at Norfolk State's offense and North Carolina Central's defense. Norfolk State's offense, led by Jalen Daniels. As you heard me mention his numbers, he's been pretty solid so far this year. He wasn't even supposed to be the starting quarterback coming into the season. He's a transfer out of a JUCO last year where he put up some decent numbers. He's come in and really got this offense rocking and rolling for Norfolk State. You know that Norfolk State is going to, I mean, there's no doubt that Norfolk State is going to want to run the football. That's what Norfolk State is going to want to do under Dawson Odoms. And they've got a good running game and a good running back in Kevon King, who's averaging 6.4 yards per carry. He's also got 4 touchdowns on the season. And what a bounce back win, I would say, for Norfolk State. So that's a solid Norfolk State offense. When I look at North Carolina Central from a defensive perspective, I really, really like the corners, and I like the secondary. I think the corners are aggressive. The secondary is aggressive. I think the run game could be an issue for the Eagles in this football game, especially that you talk about what the Spartans were able to do. The Spartans ran, I don't even have the numbers in front of me, but the Spartans really ran the football against VMI and averages 171 yards, or in excess of 171 yards rushing per game. It's a good offense, right, against a solid North Carolina Central defense who, to me, has some questions to answer about the run, doesn't have any questions to answer about the pass game. Really, really good in pass coverage. All of that said, my prediction, even though it was an emotional win for the Eagles last week, and I say, well, how do you get the guys riled up? They may not be as riled up, meaning the Spartans, as they were against the Eagles going into this game against the Spartans, but it's a MEAC game. It's a neutral site game, and I like the Eagles in a good battle in this game over the Spartans. Still to come here on Box to Row, Hampton head football coach Trenton Boykin, South Carolina State head football coach Chennis Berry, and we'll talk about NIL and the transfer portal once again.
Home sales are down 31% across America, and mortgage rates are on the rise. If your home is not selling, you need to call our experts right now at the Quick Cash Hotline. We have investors ready to pay you cash for your property, regardless of the condition it's in. Most of our closings can happen in about 7 days. You don't have to worry about a buyer getting approved. You don't have to worry about showing your home. One simple call right now. Just pick up the phone and call us. I'll give you the number in a second. We will negotiate with you a price to buy your home. It's that simple. If you're ready to sell your home right now, any home, any condition, and you don't want to put money into it, no problem. We'll buy it from you. Call right now. It's a free call.
800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. That's 800-470-7113.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to Box Row.
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Buy another round and try to shut us down about an hour ago, but we still in this.
Earlier this year, I said I was not going to talk about the NIL or the transfer portal anymore, but it's reared its ugly head once again. So, not sure if you've heard about this story with Matthew Sluka, who was now, he's still, I guess, the quarterback at UNLV, but he says he's going to sit out the season because he was promised $100,000 by an assistant coach, the offensive coordinator, to be exact. And I read this story in the Associated Press. Now, you know, I like to read the story, get the gist of what's happening. I don't like to read people's opinions. And if you know anything about the AP or the Associated Press, it's strictly news, straight stories, straight to the facts. So I read this story, and apparently the offensive coordinator offered Sluka $100,000 to transfer to UNLV from Holy Cross. In the story, it was also stated that in order for Sluka to receive the $100,000, that he would have to have graduated first, completed his degree first from Holy Cross. He was a really big-time quarterback at Holy Cross, set some records, et cetera. Matter of fact, ran for over 300 yards rushing in a single football game on last season. There are so many things wrong. And if you don't think that the transfer portal and NIL are tied together, this is the exact reason why they are. Basically, UNLV said, well, according to this story, all right, the offensive coordinator offered this kid $100,000 to play at UNLV. So in other words, sounds to me like Sluka said, okay, I'm going to go. You know, maybe he's not good enough to have played with one of the Power Five schools. But at UNLV, now with the expansion of the college football playoff, which I think now makes the NIL piece and the transfer portal piece, which again, they're linked. They are so linked. It makes it even more of a situation where you're going to have kids coming out of really smaller programs, and specifically, you know, FCS programs that are going to want, they're not interested necessarily in transferring to a Power Five school necessarily, because now you can transfer to a quote unquote mid-major FBS school, get paid, and still have an opportunity to contend for a national championship. Now, it may not be as realistic because perhaps this FBS program, again, you're talking about Nevada's in the Mountain West. That's a solid FBS conference where right now UNLV is undefeated. If UNLV, you know, and it was a 9-5 program last year. If UNLV goes undefeated, it has a shot at the playoffs, at the college football playoffs. So you may even see more kids not even concerning themselves beyond going to a Power Five and playing at a mid-major FBS or an FBS program that's a lower tier, if you will, just because there's an opportunity to still play for the national championship. Now, you know, I read this story, and listen, I am so old school. I worked in athletics administration. So the whole concept to me of NIL and transfer portal, because it was once upon a time transfer rules stated as such, and not that long ago, transfer rules stated as such, if you transfer down a level, so if you transfer from an FBS program to an FCS program, you could play right away. If you transferred across, so for instance, an FBS program to an FBS program or an FCS program to an FCS program, or if you transferred from or tried to transfer up, let's say from an FCS program to an FBS program, you had to sit out a year unless you graduated. And then if you graduated, you could play right away. Where that time is long gone. You can transfer 2, 3, 4 times. It doesn't matter, right? Again, the other thing about this, and I'm going to talk a little bit more specifically about this situation with Sluka, is that we already know the amateurism part of college athletics is out the window. Like, I'm reading this story, and the story is talking about not only that the assistant coach, which there's no denying. I mean, UNLV is not denying necessarily that this offer was made. But then there was some negotiation. The representative for Sluka is actually the is also the agent that also represents Patrick Mahomes. They were trying to get like a $10,000 per month payment for Sluka over 5 months. They were trying to negotiate this thing, right? Part of the issue in reading the story was that the collective for UNLV, because all of these schools have collectives, and even, I don't know if all of the HBCU FCS schools do, but quite a few of them do. I mean, I know North Carolina Central has a collective. I know A&T has a collective. Norfolk State has a collective. And the collective is responsible, really, for making sure that the athletes get paid, because the schools cannot pay the athlete directly. The athlete gets paid through the collective. Okay. That being said, the collective said that it told the agent, look, you need to register in Nevada and be a registered agent before you can even represent this guy, the player, meaning Sluka. You also had a situation where the collective said that it made him an offer of like they gave him $3,000, because you can negotiate before an actual contract is signed. And by the way, there wasn't even a contract signed here. So I don't think there's anything that Sluka and his representatives can do in court, because there was no contract signed. There's so many things wrong on this level. The collective said it gave Sluka a $3,000 relocation fee. It also said it offered to make payments of like $3,000 a month. So many things wrong. Let me go back. How in the world can an assistant coach make an offer to a player? And again, I don't think UNLV is denying that this offer was made. Okay. Part of that may be because the head coach doesn't want to deal with it. And the head coach for UNLV refused to have a conversation about it, refused to talk to reporters about it, refused to talk to Sluka and his father about it, which to me says the head coach didn't even want to be involved. His name is, forget his last name, but his first name is Barry, the head coach at UNLV. Didn't even want to be involved with this situation, which I'm sure a lot of coaches don't want to be involved in this situation. Why Nick Saban got out at Alabama, because, you know, you're trying to win football games. You're trying to win national championships. Who wants to deal with NIL? It is absolutely out of control. You know, in reading this particular article, I mean, what are we talking about? Like, I mean, this is so crazy. Listen, I'm sure there are some truths that UNLV is speaking, that the collective is speaking, and that the Slukas, meaning Matt Sluka, the quarterback, his father, and the collective and his representative are speaking. I'm sure they're part of what they're saying. There's truth to part of what everybody is saying, and the whole story is not being told. That's not where I stand. I'm not gonna get into who's not telling the entire truth, who's telling part of the truth, that type of thing. To me, that we're even talking about this. And if I'm UNLV, his numbers weren't great. This is not a knock. You know, again, he may be a good quarterback, hadn't seen him play. His numbers say that he's 21 of 48 but he's thrown 6 touchdowns and just 1 interception. So he's having like a decent season. It's not a great season. Numbers-wise, hadn't seen him play. All I can go by is the numbers, because I hadn't seen him play. He's completing less than 50% of his passes. But what is encouraging is he's only thrown 1 interception on the season, and UNLV is undefeated. If I'm UNLV, I'm moving on from that guy. I'm going to try to get the next man up mentality. Obviously, UNLV doesn't have that per se. You would think, at least on the roster that they know about right now. In other words, maybe they, and I don't foresee if they can bring someone up to speed. Maybe they can bring the backup quarterback up to speed. maybe change the offense a little bit, rely more on the running game, allow for the quarterback to not have to throw it so much down the field, limit his mistakes. The defense comes around because your numbers aren't great. And, you know, again, from a legal perspective, I'm only going by a legal perspective, you don't have a contract. So you don't have a contract. I mean, it's not that you shouldn't, that gentlemen's agreements shouldn't be adhered to. The problem is the assistant coach made this offer, not the head coach, not the athletics director, not the school, the offensive coordinator. So look, I'm sorry, but this is a life lesson. And this is a life lesson, I think, for Matt Sluka, probably more so for his representatives who didn't even get the contract in writing. He didn't even get it in writing. We're talking about contracts now in college football. This is not, this is worse. They talk about the NFL contracts and not having guaranteed contracts and all of those kind of things, and the players have figured a workaround around this. This is worse than that. This, where we are with respect to college football in the NIL, is worse than the contracts in the National Football League. At least there's a workaround. Now are players going to sit out because they don't get what they're promised in college football? I mean, this is absolutely awful. I think players should get paid, but NIL is not the way to go about it. We'll be back. This is your weekly edition of the HBCU Blitz presented by Box to Row. I'm Donald Ware. We got plenty of places to go, so jump on for the ride. First, I'm going to take you to Durham, North Carolina for the rivalry matchup between the North Carolina A&T Aggies and the North Carolina Central Eagles. The Eagles won the toss, deferred to the second half, meaning A&T received the kickoff.
He's going to bring it out. He's up to the 10-yard line. He's got a seam. He gets to the outside. He's got one man to beat. 40-yard line, 45, down the sideline. He may go. 30-yard line, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Aggies. 100 yards.
For Aaron Harris and the Aggies led 6-0. Now, let's pick things up with about 6 minutes remaining in the first quarter. A&T holding the 9-7 lead and the Eagles with possession.
Two back pistol and the give is to Taylor. Taylor has running room. He's loose into A&T secondary. They're not going to catch him. 20-yard line, 15, 10, 5. Inside the number for the touchdown.
Yours truly on the Aggie Sports Radio Network. Jamari Taylor for 66 yards would give the Eagles the 14-9 lead as the Eagles would go on to rout the Aggies 66-24. Now, to Daytona Beach, where the Bethune-Cookman Wildcats were hosting the Clark Atlanta Panthers. Let's move all the way to the fourth quarter with seconds remaining. Bethune-Cookman trying to protect a 37-35 lead and a 55-yard field goal attempt by the Panthers.
The Wildcats are going to come after this with all their worth. The snap is down. The kick is away. It is going. It is good.
The new guy, Mike Truillo, on the Cat Eye Network, Leonardo Cabrera from 55 yards to give the Panthers the 38-37 upset victory of Bethune-Cookman. Don't look now. The Panthers are 3-0-1 on the season, ranked number 2 in the HBCU Division II coaches poll. Let's move things along to Petersburg, Virginia, for the CIAA matchup between the Winston-Salem State Rams and the Virginia State Trojans.
Lorenzana to give the Rams the lead with 6 seconds remaining. Snap, place down, kick is up, and it is good. Rams lead with 3 seconds remaining.
My man, John Emmett on WVST. The Rams defeated the Trojans 15-14 and moved to number 3 in the HBCU Division II coaches poll. To Charlotte for the matchup between Johnson C. Smith and Virginia Union.
Back to throw is Ocean down the middle.
That was P.J. Manderville on the Golden Bulls Sports Network. 20-yard touchdown pass from Darius Ocean to Quavari Crouch. At that time, giving the Golden Bulls the 14-3 lead late in the first half, as the Golden Bulls went on to defeat The CIAA defending champion Panthers 21-16. Don't look now, but Johnson C. Smith remains undefeated and remains number one in the HBCU Division II coaches poll. To Grambling, Louisiana, for the game between the GSU Tigers and the Jackson State Tigers.
The snap, and it gets away from Jacobian. The ball is loose. It looks like Grambling will have it, and they do. Patrick Marshall comes up with it in the end zone, and that is another touchdown off a turnover for the G-men to extend the lead.
That was the Hall of Famer, Rob J, on the Jackson State Tigers Network. The G-men defeated Jackson State 41-20. Don't look now, but the G-men move up 7 spots to number 3 in this week's HBCU FCS coaches poll. And in Nashville,
they fake the handoff to Melton, dumps it off to Wilson, left side. He's barreling his way to the 15, to the 10, to the 5, to the end zone. Touchdown!
The former Fort Valley State and Johnson C. Smith star got his first touchdown in the NFL as the Packers went on to defeat the Titans 30-14. That audio courtesy of the Packers radio network, Wayne Larrabee, on the call. And if you missed our conversation with Emmanuel Wilson from a couple of weeks ago, you can go to the Box to Row YouTube channel. Box to Row, the radio show, airs weekly on radio stations across the country as well as on Sirius XM. To listen to the show or for more information, visit boxtorow.com. Let's continue here on Box to Row. We're joined by a gentleman in his first season as the head football coach at South Carolina State. The previous 3 seasons, he was the head football coach at Benedict. Did an absolutely tremendous job. The Bulldogs are coming off a bye week. Got a rivalry matchup, an old MEAC rivalry matchup on Saturday at home against North Carolina A&T. Chennis Berry, again, the head football coach at South Carolina State, joins us here on the program. What's going on, Coach Berry?
How you doing, man? It's good to be here, man. You doing all right?
I'm doing great. I got to say this, man, because, you know, I look at your career. You're an HBCU guy through and through, played at Savannah State. Everywhere you've been, including Morris Brown, when Morris Brown had football, you have been at HBCUs. And to get your opportunities at Benedict the previous 3 years, at South Carolina State this year, shows that, to me, if you put in the work, you know, you put on good tape, as you would say to players, all good things are going to happen to really good people. Can you kind of speak to that and now getting this opportunity as the head football coach of the Bulldogs?
Man, listen, first of all, thank you for acknowledging that, man. God is good, man. I'm grateful. Like you say, man, paid the fee in HBC football. You're talking about, I've been in HBC football since 1991 as a player, then transitioning to coaching in 96, man. And I've seen it all, you know, so grateful when you just continue to fall in love with the process and you just bloom where you planted. I truly believe in blooming where you planted. Don't worry about the next job. Just be where your feet are and be the best you can be at where you're at. And good things are happening for you, man. I really believe this is a ministry for me. This was my calling. You know, we all have aspirations, right? We want to go to the higher level. And you want to try to go to the Power 5, NFL, all that. But I truly believe that this was my calling to work with HBCU young men and make them not only better football players, but better men.
It's all in – you're a man of faith, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. It's all in God's timing. Were you always shooting to be a head football coach? Because, look, when you climb that ladder, as you talked about, you've been an assistant head coach, you've been an offensive coordinator, you've been an offensive line coach, and in particular when you're that offensive coordinator, that's sort of the next step to being a head coach, but it's now happening for you the last 4 years. Were you always climbing to be a head coach?
You know, honestly, I share this all the time. I never had aspiration to be a head coach. I just wanted to be the best O-line coach, the best coordinator that I can be. And I knew that if I did a good job of that and represent myself and my name and my brand everywhere that I went, the opportunities would come. And like you say, offensive coordinators typically get an opportunity, especially if you're doing well, to you know, be the guys at least on those short lists for head coaching jobs in those AD's eyes. So I started noticing it about, you know, when I was at Southern University about 2016, when we were really, really doing good offensively, you know, my name started coming up in terms of head coaching opportunities with different people and, you know, top five coordinators that, you know, might get a chance to be a head coach. So I knew it was coming. It was coming down the line. Then I started getting interviews. And eventually the right job for me was at the right time. Because people don't know this. When I got the Benedict job, I was actually a finalist for the Howard job at the time. And they ended up going with Larry Scott. And I also was a finalist for the Fort Valley job. And they end up going with the young man that's at John C. Smith right now.
Yeah, so, Maurice Flowers.
Mo Flowers, that's right. They ended up going with Mo Flowers. So, you know, I was always kind of in the mix, but, you know, it was a great opportunity for me at Benedict College. And I'm grateful, you know, for the time that I had here. Now it's time for me to write my own story here at South Carolina State. And I'm grateful to be the head football coach here.
And I think it's a solid story to this point. I mean, look, you're 1-2, but look, you played, you know, you played Georgia Southern. It's an FBS program. You had Florida A&M on the ropes. You had a really nice win against the Citadel, and now you're coming off an off week. Your thoughts, and I think that's interesting, an early off week. So your thoughts on not only on the field where your team is right now, but off the field as well at 1-2, having had the off week as well.
Oh, I feel great on our program. You know, like you say, we went down to FAM, had an opportunity to win, man. We were up by 11 in the fourth quarter, man. We just didn't know how to win at the moment. But we learned from that. I always say we don't lose, we learn. And we actually learned from that loss. And then we came back and played a good Citadel team. And anybody that watches Citadel, they have a good team. And we went to a hostile territory, found a way to win a close game. So that brought us closer together. And got our young men believing. Then we went to play Georgia Southern. And like I say, man, whenever you get a chance to play those FBS, we want to play well. Obviously, we have an aspiration. The mission doesn't change, try to go 1-0. But those games are tough. And so to have the off week has been amazing. Our team really believes. I truly believe, man. And again, people will see it. But we have a really, really good football team. And we're gonna do some really good things this year. But we love where we are right now. As a staff, we love where we are. Players, we love where we are. I met with my leadership council. They're confident. They love where we are. We're finally healthy because we were a banged up football team after those first three games. And now we're gonna put our best foot forward against a good North Carolina A&T football team this upcoming Saturday.
Chenis Berry, again, in his first season as the head football coach at South Carolina State, he joins us here on Box to Row. The Bulldogs are hosting North Carolina A&T. From again, Benedict is a Division II school, but it's a private school. South Carolina State, Division I, but it's a public school. Have you found it, you know, in terms of navigating and the scholarships and all of those kind of things, you know, how has it been so far for you at South Carolina State, in particular with it being a public school where maybe at Benedict, even though it was a smaller school, you could operate a little more freely, if you will?
Well, there's definitely a difference. I never really understood the difference between state institutions and private, but there is a difference. And you're right. At Benedict, we were private. You know, things happen a lot faster. And I'll just say, I'll leave it like this in public. In state school, it takes a little longer. There's a few more red tape things you have to go through, but it's been fun, man. South Carolina State is a brand, it's a brand nationally. I mean, universally. I mean, people know about South Carolina State, and it makes recruiting and things of that nature a whole lot smoother because there's so many Bulldogs, not only in the state of South Carolina, but there's Bulldogs all over this nation. And they really, really love, and they're very, very proud of this institution. And it's my job. My obligation as the head football coach to lead from the front and put us back to respectability like we should and we deserve to be.
You know, and that MEAC, I think the MEAC, you know, with you coming in at South Carolina, I think every team is going to, all said and done, the MEAC as a whole is just very improved this year. But let me talk personnel. You mentioned, you know, really liking your team and the players. Eric Phoenix, let me start there. The quarterback, he played for you a couple of years ago at Benedict, transferred to Murray State where he played. I don't know if he played or not, but he was at Murray State last year. And now he's doing some things for you now. Just talk about how he's played so far.
Eric has played really, really well, honestly. I mean, all three games, he's played really well. He's taking care of the football. He had one turnover so far. He's one interception. But Eric has moved our offense up and down the field. If you really have watched us the first three games, regardless of who we play, and including Georgia Southern, our offense has matriculated up and down the field throughout the games. And he is the reason for that. He does a good job with, you know, understanding our offense and what we're asking him to do. He does a very good job in the passing game as well as in the running game. So, I mean, he's a true dual threat quarterback, and he's doing amazing. Honestly, he's playing really, really well, and I'm proud of how he has developed in the time that he's been here. And he's really won over his teammates as well, because they believe in him as well.
DeAndre Duhart, one of your running backs, another young man that you brought over or that came from Benedict with you now at South Carolina State. Your thoughts on how he's performed so far this year?
Oh, man, just love him, man. He's just a pleasure to have in the program. If you sat in a room with Duhart, you wouldn't know who he was, because he doesn't say two words. I mean, he really does not talk. You know, you have to really not. He's very well spoken, and when he has an opportunity to talk, he does, but he's just not one of the guys going to start a conversation. But you talk about when he's on that football field, he is an animal, and he runs like an animal, and he runs just violently and just a great kid. He practices the same way. He loves the weight room. He's a great kid. He's got great grades. He's just an unbelievable, really, really good football player. We're glad to have Duhart in our program.
Your thoughts on the way the defense has played so far this year?
And they've done some good things as well. I mean, I really love this football team. I mean, obviously, we have to do a better job sometimes when we get people in third down situations. And a lot of times we get them in third and long. We got to get away, find a way to get off the field. But I think they're doing a really good job. You know, we're stopping the run, and that's what it's all about. Come down and stop the run, putting teams in tough situations to try to convert on third down. I think we're doing that. You know, we got to continuously grow. I'm going to keep repeating and keep reiterating, I love where we are as a football team right now. And we'll continue to show the world what South Carolina State football is all about.
I mentioned you throughout your career, you've been at HBCUs, one of the HBCUs you were at twice, North Carolina A&T, who's the opponent on Saturday. Your thoughts on the Aggies so far this year?
Well, of course, they just suffered a tough one against their rival, man. You know, whenever you play your rival, man, it's just so much can happen. And you know, one or two plays can turn into a nightmare, man, because it can just start spiraling. And once that momentum start rolling the other team's way, it's hard to kind of stop it. And everything went North Carolina Central's way that night, to be honest. But, you know, A&T's still a good football team. They're 1-3 right now. You know, they lost to Wake Forest, a good Wake Forest team. They lost to, of course, North Carolina Central. They lost to the University of Delaware, which is a top FCS program. So they lost to some good football teams, good football programs, but they beat a tough Western Salem team in overtime. So we have nothing but respect for the Aggies. We understand what Aggie pride is all about. We understand they're really, really powerful alumni as well, just like these Bulldog alumni are very, very powerful. So I think overall it's going to be a great atmosphere. If I were any fan, I would buy a ticket for this one, because it's going to be rocking and rolling here at Oliver C. Dawson Stadium. Can't wait to welcome the Aggies into our stadium.
Last thought, and we appreciate the time. I often hear you talk. You and I have talked for years now, but again, on these conference calls, you mentioned the fact on the MEAC call on Monday that you had 9 of your players were baptized, you know, the previous Sunday. And you had talked about, I think the week before, talked about 15 of the guys wanted to be saved, had went up in front of the church going back a couple of weeks ago. Just can you kind of speak to that? What does that mean to you?
Oh, it means the world to me. I mean, honestly, winning games are important. They are very important. That's how I stay employed. But winning souls, getting young men to give their life to Christ, that's probably more a bigger win, because you're winning in the game of life, not just winning in the football field. Because we know that this game, football, has an expiration date, and it's going to go a whole lot longer. The game of life will go a whole lot longer than the game of football. But it just brings joy to my heart. And again, I want to reiterate this, because I don't want people painting the picture that I force religion on anybody, because I don't. I just lead from the front. I'm a man of God, and I don't run from it. I don't press it on anybody. When these young men went up and decided to give their life to Christ, not at one point in time did I ask them to do that. They went and did that because that was a choice that they made. And when they made that choice, they wanted to take the next step. You know, a lot of people go up and join churches and say they want to give their life to Christ, but they don't go and follow through with it. These young men, on their own, without Coach Berry's guidance, decided that that church that they went to, they actually wanted to get baptized. And it's literally right across the street from our campus, New Mount Zion Baptist Church. And to see nine of those young men with some of their families in attendance be able to get baptized and me be able to witness it, that was ultimate win for me. So winning games are extremely important. Winning souls are probably more important for me.
Thank you for sharing that. Chinnis Berry, again, in his first season as the head football coach at South Carolina State, joins us here on the program. The Bulldogs are hosting the North Carolina A&T Aggies on Saturday. Coach Berry, always appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Bulldogs.
Thank you so much, man. God bless you. Love what you're doing. You keep doing what you're doing. Keep bringing knowledge to everybody in the world about what's going on our campuses, man. So grateful for you, and thank you for the relationship that you and I have. Appreciate you, man. It's a great day.
Thank you, Coach Berry. Trenton Boykin, the head football coach at Hampton, is up next.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
So Bryce Young has been benched in favor of Andy Dalton. What I've seen, there are many more questions that need to be answered. Towards the end of the last season, he was better. The game that I saw against the Saints, he wasn't good at all. We can talk about the ownership in David Tepper and some of the questionable things that have happened. We can talk about the development of a guy. But I think a lot of this falls on Bryce Young's shoulders. I've watched him play. He doesn't look like he knows what he's doing.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
Now, back to From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
All right, the Hampton Pirates are 3-1 on the season. Winners of their last three games, including the victory over Howard 27-20 in Washington, D.C. in his first season as the head football coach at Hampton. The interim head coach is, of course, Trenton Boykin. And, as a matter of fact, the Pirates are going to be taking on William and Mary on the road on Saturday in CAA match, in a CAA matchup, as Coach Boykins joins us here on the program. What's going on, Coach? Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. And just, again, another day of trying to get ready for this one. Another great test for us, and looking forward for this opportunity for us to show what we can do, you know, for our first contest of a CAA opponent.
You know, another good matchup between Howard and Hampton. The Pirates have won the last eight games in this series. Yeah. Yes. Your thoughts on the way you played at Howard in Washington, D.C.?
You know, again, we talk about being a business trip. You know, you try to balance them enjoying the atmosphere and the all the festivities that go on, you know, prior to, and have an opportunity to, you know, to be on First Take. And then our guys went over and practiced in Maryland's indoor facility and then get ready for that game. So, you know, just to have those guys pumped up, ready to go, they understand the importance of this game. It's, you know, it's circled and talked about, you know, as soon as it's over. You know, you got, you know, former alumni, hey, you know, we've won, you know, seven straight. You got to keep the streak going. And you know, so you got to kind of keep those distractions out of the players and coaches' ear and get focused to play. And I, you know, I thought our guys, you know, played their butts off. You know, they were excited about it. You know, we let some opportunities, you know, kind of get by us. But overall, you know, again, what you're seeing with this team is guys playing together, staying together, fighting together, and seeing things that we do in practice come to life, you know, in the actual games.
Your thoughts on the way your team ran the ball? I don't know if the game plan coming in, because you've got two dual threat quarterbacks who played well. Maybe the plan was to actually run the football. I mean, numbers don't always tell the story. The quarterbacks collectively may didn't have the greatest numbers, but at the end of the day, you ran for 263 yards against Howard.
Again, we have two starting quarterbacks. I tell people all the time, you know, we've got 3.5, 4 running backs that we'll play. Our O-line has done a great job. So, I mean, of course, you know, my DNA and kind of the cloth that I'm cut from is, you know, we want to be able to establish the run and set up the run. Both quarterbacks can throw the football. We have some excellent wide receivers. But right now, you know, what Howard was showing and what they were giving us, we felt like we could just keep running it, and we were going to run it until they stopped us.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You're right. 293 yards rushing in that victory over the Bison. For you, how are you sort of getting, not that you're getting acclimated, you're already in this thing, but I think, you know, it's a tough position to take over a team as the interim head coach pretty much after the spring game. Like, that's when you sort of got named. So, you know, just your thoughts on that and having to kind of bring this team together in that short amount of time.
Well, I think what some people don't realize, I've been on this staff for 4 years. And so I already have a rapport with a lot of these players, you know, on this team. So, you know, you look at the guys that are basically, if you are a sophomore, junior, or senior, you know, I've been around, you know. And so, you know, I really don't feel like it was a big jump in the sense of me trying to learn who they were, for them to try to learn who I was, because I had been around, you know, coaching the running backs, you know, for the last, you know, 3 years, up to that 2021, 22, and 23, you know, I was a running back coach here. And then being the special teams coordinator, you get to be able to be with all the players, because you got defensive players, offensive players, linebackers, cornerbacks, wide receivers, O linemen, D linemen. So being in a position to be the special teams coordinator also, you know, I was able to interact with a lot of the guys on the team. So when this all happened, it wasn't me really trying to learn who they were and them learning who I was, you know. So they already kind of knew kind of my coaching style, my fireness that I have, and just how I coach the running backs. And so when this went down, it wasn't a big, oh man, I need to figure out who they are or what they are. You know, we did a great job. We've always ran the ball well here. And so, you know, that wasn't going to be something that was new, that, hey, we went from being a passing offense to now something we're running. I mean, we were running the top leading rushers, you know, in the country last year and in the conference. And so you still have that. A lot of guys on this staff, I only had to hire 3 new coaches. And so there was already some continuity there with the coaches that were already here on the staff. So, you know, for us, it wasn't maybe in the outside world. Some people are like, oh, man, you know, look what's going on. But for us inside and in this building, there wasn't a big, oh no, you know, what are we going to do now? We've got to kind of learn this new offense. We've got to learn this new coaching staff. We got to learn this new head coach. They already kind of had a good grasp of who we were and what we were trying to get accomplished.
Trenton Boykin, again, in his first season as the interim head football coach at Hampton, he joins us here on Box to Row. You mentioned the running backs and having coached the running backs for 4 years. Elijah Burris, like, you know, he's really, 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 really good. I thought he should have got more accolades really coming in to the season. He was, I believe, 2nd in FCS in terms of rushing yards per carry. He's just tremendous. Your thoughts in terms of him as a running back, and then how he's played so far this season?
You know, he's coming along. You know, the tough thing is, you know, when you do get some accolades and people are now focusing on you a little bit more, you know, it can get a little tough. And I think that's why you're seeing some of our other running backs having a little bit more success, because everybody gets so focused on, hey, their run game. If you stop Elijah Burris, then you have a chance to win. And so, you know, he's still running well. You know, we're trying to limit it, his carries. You know, I think he had over, you know, 25, 26 carries in the 2 previous games. And so, you know, we want to keep him healthy. It's a long season. But just his leadership, how he practices day to day, how he prepares, watching film and, you know, taking care of his body. You know, right now he's on track to really have a good season for us, but we also need those other guys to come along too, to take some of that burden off of me.
Your thoughts, the next opponent, you're on the road, not that far up the road against, of course, William and Mary. Your thoughts on some of the challenges maybe that William and Mary present?
They've been in this conference a lot longer than us. You know, they've been to the playoffs. They've had success. You know, Coach and I, Coach London and I go back to 1998. I was a GA at Boston College. He was a D-line coach there. So we go back to 98, knowing each other and being in touch with each other since then. They're well coached, well disciplined. They're D-line or big guys that, you know, try to knock you off the ball. You know, they fly around in the secondary. You know, if you look at stats, we're similar. You know, what they do, and they're going to try to run it down your throat. You know, they have a two quarterbacks system. One of them is really more of an athlete that can be back there, but they've got kind of a two quarterback system. The running back is a downhill type guy. So, you know, the challenges we've got to, you know, defensively, we're going to have to be gap sound, eye discipline. Offensively, we've got to seize the moments when the opportunity presents itself. We have to seize those moments, but we're looking forward to it. This will be a good stepping stone to see where we at in this conference.
You know, you have had a myriad of experiences in terms of on the collegiate level as an assistant coach at the FBS level, head coach at the Division II level, FCS level, now as the interim head football coach at Hampton. How have all of those experiences prepared you for where you are now as the interim head coach at Hampton with a 3-1 record, winners of your last three football games?
You know, I think you look at the things that you've done in the past. You know, I've always talked to our guy, you know, it's the good and bad and uglies of what you've done in the past, you know, and you try to see what you liked at some of these other places. I've been around some great head coaches over my times, you know, the Terry Bowdens and the Jim Tressels and, you know, guys like that. And so you really kind of look back at the notes that you used to take as an assistant coach. You look at some of the things that I did when I was a coach, head coach before. Okay, I couldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. And so you just learn, you know, you've been in this profession for 28 years. You know, you really do a good job of taking notes, taking what other people have done and try to mold it into what fits you, you know. And at the end of the day, you've got to be who you are. You know, you take some things from other people, but at the end, you got to take what makes you go and what your things that you like. And so it's just been, for me, I've been blessed to be around some great head coaches, you know, over my time, you know, the Brady Hokes and just a lot. I can't give praise enough to those guys and really just kind of pick their brains while I were there. And I still call guys now. I mean, even when I got this job, I called Coach Taylor, who is a legendary coach here. And probably 2 days after I got the job, called him and said, "Hey, coach, I want to come and talk with you and speak with you because you've been here. You've been at this university. And so, you know, the ins and outs of this place." And so, you know, never got too big to say you can't learn. And then, you know, I've always was told at the beginning, "Hey, you got to surround yourself with good people." And I feel like I've done that with this staff as well. There's a lot of knowledge on this staff that's been previous head coaches, have been coordinators. And so, you know, when you put all that mixed together, I think that's what's helped, you know, this program be where we're at right now at this moment.
The Hampton Pirates ranked number 4 in the HBCU FCS coaches poll again in his first season as the interim head football coach of the Pirates is Trenton Boykin. He joins us here on Box to Row. The Pirates are on the road on Saturday at William and Mary. Coach Boykin, we really appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Pirates.
Man, I appreciate you. Thank you very much for having me.
Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Trenton Boykin, the head football coach at Hampton. Chennis Berry, the head football coach at South Carolina State, for joining us today here on Box to Row. For more information on the program, visit our website at boxtorow.com. And always remember to support those that support. Yo, Box to Row is produced IDW Communications.